Emily, I have an important announcement.
What is it?
As do you, I think.
Oh, gosh. I'm so excited.
There are two really exciting things happening, milestones for both of us.
What are they, Jonathan?
They culminate at the Trap Lodge Mountain Marathon. Am I right?
Yeah. So that'll be your first...
My very first marathon I just signed up for. It was on my bucket list to do a marathon before I was 30. And my plan was to do it in Antarctica. And
of course it was.
I tried, I put the deposit down. I'm like, I'm on the waiting list. I didn't realize there would be a waiting list.
Right.
So unfortunately, I don't think my Antarctica marathon before March is going to happen.
It could still happen.
It could. There could be a surprise. But to make sure I got the marathon done, I decided to sign up for one and figured if it's not Antarctica, it might as well still be hard. So I went for the mountain marathon, make it a trail, not a road. Right?
Yeah. And this, what is the milestone for me? I guess it's first trail race ever. So I was just like, why start with a 5 miler when you could just do a full marathon?
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, I ran obviously a marathon before, but that was road, and I actually
just one. Okay.
Just the one. Yeah, and
you
it was
strike
terrible.
Me as someone who would have run 50.
Well, I've run a lot of races, but that's the only marathon.
Okay.
Yeah, but thank you for that. Like. Compliment, amazing. but yeah, so I want to do a trail race this year. I've been really stoked on trail running lately, and I was like, I'm just gonna sign up, so I have to like go out to the mountains and train. So now we're gonna be doing this together, and it's gonna be rad.
Yep.
Do you want to hold hands the entire time?
No.
Okay, cool.
No,
me neither.
I don't want to do that.
That was asking for a friend.
So we have just a couple months to train before that. The furthest I've ever run so far is 16 miles.
In your life?
In my life, 16 miles.
Nice.
I generally will go out a couple times a week for, you know, 5 or 8 or 10. So I feel pretty confident that I can get this, but it's going to be tough. It's like 4,000 feet of elevation gain with the 26.2 miles.
Yeah, it's going to be also like the 13.1. It's just you do the same loop
twice
over again. So the mental capacity that you're going to need is
just
like...
Just restarting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually what my road marathon was too. And it was really hard.
Okay.
Speaking of marathons, though, trail marathons, who do we have on the show today?
We have Myrna Valeria.
Oh my gosh. The Myrnavator.
The Myrnavator.
Welcome to the Stokecast, where each week we bring you an inspiring athlete, adventurer, or entrepreneur and dig into their stories and strategies for balancing work, life, and adventure while having fun and making a difference. I'm Jonathan Ronzio.
And I'm Emily Holland. Thanks for joining us today.
Let's get to it.
Okay, so Emily, can you give our guests a rundown of who Myrna is?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that describe her. But the first thing, she's an ultra trail runner.
Yep.
She's run like countless races, I think. But she's also done road races as well. She's an author. She's a great Instagram storyteller. She's a mother. She's
a teacher.
Yeah, she is incredible. She's so well-rounded. She also like knows class. She's classically trained in music too, is it? Is she singing? So anyways, she's musically inclined as well. So she's a very well-rounded human being, an amazing person to talk to, super inspiring. We were just so happy to have her on.
Yeah, totally. And so Myrna really has been, I mean, she was named National Geographic Adventure of the Year.
Yep.
She is just in the news redefining the shape of running, really.
Yep.
Like she basically, Myrna is a bigger woman who you wouldn't expect to... Generally, I mean, it's not what you see in marketing. It's not what you see in movies. It's like, she's not the stereotype of an ultra runner.
Right.
And yet she's out there crushing it. She's done like 11 50Ks and like 8 or 10 marathons, or I don't know the exact numbers of all these, but she is crushing trail and empowering people who feel like maybe they're not a runner. Maybe they're slow. Maybe they're like have never run but want to. And she's empowering them to get out there and be confident at their own pace.
Yeah. While also challenging the industry to offer more just products for people in that space too. Like just overall, she's been awesome in being an advocate for everyone to have access to running like she does.
And after our interview, we actually were able to catch up with Myrna at the recent summer market, the outdoor retailer show in Denver. And she's just great. If you ever have a chance to run into Myrna at one of the events she's speaking at, or maybe go to her Slow AF trail running retreat.
Get her book at a book signing.
She's just like, immediately, she's the kind of person that feels like your best friend.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we hope you enjoy this interview with Myrna Valeria.
All right, welcome to the Stokecast, Myrna. How are you doing today?
I am doing great, and thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, thank you. It's we're really excited to chat with you. So it's Jonathan here and Emily.
Hello, hi Myrna.
Hey there, what's up, girl?
Well, we are so excited to chat with you, and as most people probably know, we're in Boston, and we're so excited to hear about all of your fun things that are going on in your life, your fun retreats that you're doing, your book, and how you kind of went down this path. But because we're in Boston, obviously we want to ask you how the Boston Marathon went this year. Was that your first time running it?
That was my first and probably last time running it.
Man, it was a brutal year.
Not my first marathon, but right. Definitely the hardest for obvious reasons. It was cold, it was windy, it rained the entire time I was out there, and not just in trickles, yeah. But torrentially the entire time. But you know, it was, even though the conditions weren't amazing, in fact, they were awful. The whole weekend, I had the time of my life. It was just such a special experience. The entire city comes out, even in the pouring rain, even in the cold, even in the wind. And there was just such a great spirit about it. I'd do it again in a heartbeat, even with poor weather.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how crazy it was for everyone else out there running. I mean, later that day when the marathon was, it was still going, but it was like the last few people were trickling in. I ended up psyching myself up enough to go for a run, and it was cold and brutal, and I ran like the opposite way of the marathon, maybe like 3.5 miles, just like alongside the fence there, cheering everybody on that was going towards the finish. And after 3 miles, I was just like, man, I cannot believe like the people who crushed another 23. So congrats.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So when did you kind of like, you know, that you said that wasn't your first marathon. You have done, what, 9 others or 8 others and plus a whole bunch of ultras? Like, how did this become your life?
So Boston was my 10th marathon. Wow. And previous to that, I had also done 10 ultras, and then I finished another one about 2 weeks after Boston. So, how did it become my life? I've always loved to run. Well, actually, since high school, I ran because I started running because I wanted to get better at field hockey and lacrosse back in 1989 as a freshman, which sounds really long ago. And so I developed a love for that, for the feeling that running gave me, for the strength it gave me, for the endurance that it gave me in high school. And, you know, as I went throughout adulthood, I continued running just recreationally. And I took a course in running. It was a running clinic offered by the Hospital for Special Surgery when I worked for corporate America. And so that kind of rekindled my love for running. And then in 2008, I had this health scare, and I hadn't been running in about 3.5 years, and I hadn't really been active since my son was, or actually since we moved to Maryland from New York City. And so that health scare helped propel me to start running again and start just being physically active in general, and just really watching out for my own personal health, as opposed to just watching out for my family's health and how they were doing. And so I started doing 5Ks and 10Ks again, and that turned into half marathons and then a full marathon eventually. And then I did my first trail marathon. And right at the end of the trail marathon, when the race director was putting the medal on me, he said, "Well, I'll see you next year for the 50K, all right?"
I love that.
And I'm like, dude, like, can I just finish my Gatorade and think about that?
Back off. I just accomplished this amazing thing.
Yeah, and so that's how that happened. So that my first ultra marathon was in 2013, and I fell in love with it because, you know, it really was all mental. and my body could do it, and I could run the next day, and I felt great. I mean, I'm sore and tired, but I felt great. I felt better than I felt after running a road marathon. And because, you know, it uses different muscles in your body, and it's an entirely different thing. And and so I just fell in love with the training. I fell in love with the community of trail runners, and it just became a very, very significant part of my social life, my exercise life, and my mental and spiritual life, because I just felt so much better about myself and about my own personal goals and things that I could do. And so it just opened up a whole new world to me.
So you talk about how running makes you feel stronger, makes you feel, better, whereas that's not the case for 90% of people, probably. Like, unless you are, would call yourself and qualify yourself as a runner, most people are afraid to go for a run or, like, dread going for a run because they feel like it's this chore that they have to do that hurts, that they're not good at. Like they hear about the mythical runner's high that they can never feel, and at what point for you did it transition, or did it always kind of like give you this empowered feeling since the start, since you talked about in high school?
Well, you know, that's a good question. When I started running in high school, I had a very specific goal in mind. And my goal was to get better at running because there was so much running in field hockey and lacrosse, and I wasn't very good at it. So that was my frame of mind. But then as I started this routine of running really early in the morning before school started, I noticed that it had a significant effect on the way I handled my day. And it's hard to sort of visualize me thinking that or being able to verbalize that as a 13, 14-year-old, but that's exactly what it was. It made me feel really good. And I did get better at both sports because I spent time working on running. And it wasn't a chore. I always loved moving my body. Even though I grew up in Brooklyn, we were always outside. We were outside all day back then. You know, this is before the Sega Genesis and the Ataris became really prominent. And so our parents would kick us out of the house. We weren't really allowed to come in unless we were going to the bathroom or getting a glass of water. And we'd be outside all day, like making up games and running up and down the block and going to the park and riding our bikes around the block. And so I came from that kind of existence where we were always outside. We weren't necessarily doing sports, but we were always active, always outside. And we traveled in a huge pack of cousins, brothers and sisters. And so that was my lifestyle. And so I guess this was the next thing. And I just loved the way, you know, being on a team made me feel. I went to an all-girls private school, and it was a very just wonderful, wonderful experience. And so the running helped me, I guess, remain happy and productive and flourishing in field hockey and lacrosse. And so I always connect it. Anytime I run and anytime like I achieve a runner's high, it always brings me back to the time when I played sports in high school.
Yeah. I think that's a good lesson for parents too, is to not lose sight of just, okay, you're outside now and you can't come in until you're just like totally wiped for right? the day.
That's how we all grew up. And yeah. Like, is it, and now you are a mom. Is that how you are with your son?
Things are very different. when we were living in Jersey at another boarding school, he was outside all the time. Just there were other little boys there, and they would disappear for hours at a time, and they'd be riding their bikes. They'd be like in the backwoods doing something, you know, and they would come in all smelly and gross, but tired. But you know, having expended a lot of energy and having explored. And so I guess as he got older, it became a little, and with the, you know, with the increased availability of video games and things on the computer, and it became a little bit more difficult. But and my kid is, I mean, like, he plays sports, so he has opportunities to go out and, you know, like plays basketball and tennis, and he used to be a swimmer. He also, how could I forget? He was also on my cross country team this year.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's great. So yeah, he's got you as a role model. Of course he's out there crushing in the outdoors.
Well, you know, it's funny because he always said that he wasn't a runner.
Me too.
That was my thing. That was my thing. And he was going to go play basketball and tennis. So, but then he showed up for cross country practice the first day, and I said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "I'm going to try out for cross country." Like, really? Okay. And every day, I would be surprised by his presence. And he did really well, and I was really proud of him. But yeah,
that's awesome. I love how you equate the fact that, I mean, just having the discipline to get better at running trickled into getting better at the sports you were playing and making you feel better about your day and have more energy and every, like, it's just so fundamental. And I've noticed that, I'm sure Emily, like, yeah. when you go for a run, like, it's such a introspective thing, but it's also this like worldwide phenomenon that everybody can go for a run and it makes everything better.
Yeah. And I think I always say this to myself in the mirror when I'm trying to psych myself up to go do a run or to do a workout in general. I'm like, you're not going to regret it afterwards. You're going to feel great. Yeah. And I think, Myrna, you're like a good example of that. And you're just speaking to that truth.
Oh, yeah. And it's so true. I definitely have my days like this morning where I planned to get up and do a run in North Carolina in the most beautiful place ever. But I was so tired from having done my retreat that we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did not go for my run because I was really tired. But but most days I do, like if I have a run scheduled or if there's some kind of goal that I am working towards, even if I'm tired, even if I am really, really not feeling it for a variety of reasons, I know that I'm going to feel 100% better than I felt after my run. I might be tired and, you know, sore, but mentally, I'm in a different place after my run. And right. even those times when I've injured myself, I totally would do it again.
Yeah. I mean, you're on fire. You come back and like you've something about it. Like you connect ideas in your head and it gives you new motivations and new things to try. And like, you remember the conversation you wanted to have with that person or the thing you need to do in your business, right? It's just like you work everything out. It's great.
Jonathan often texts me a lot of business ideas right after you run. I can tell when he's running. I don't know if you do that too, Myrna. Maybe ideas for your book or something come to you when you're in the middle of a nice long run.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The other, I was in Wyoming, 2 weeks ago, and I was worried about the speech that I had to do on the weekend, and because it was a new kind of speech and had new stories in it, and I was worried about not being prepared, I had written an entire speech, and it didn't feel right. And so I went for a run, not with the intention of, you know, rewriting the speech or clearing my head. I had to go for a run because that's what my coach put on my schedule. But then as soon as I started, everything became clear. You know, because I was so focused on my footfalls and you know, just being aware that it just created this laser focus that I could use for other things. And so that's what happened. And yeah, and it was just, and then I wrote the speech, and then it was, and it went over really well.
That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know?
So what are some, speaking of, okay, so you have a coach and you try to remind yourself that you'll feel better after the run and it's just going to add to your day in a positive way. But are there like certain tricks that you employ to get yourself up earlier than you want to actually do those runs and go to those workouts?
Yeah. I mean, and how important is actually having the accountability of a coach, like, versus being self-motivated?
Right. You know what? I don't have any tricks. I don't, like, and you know, it's funny because people ask, what's your trick? What's the thing that you do that reminds you that you need to go for a run? I know that I have to do it. And it's as simple as that. That is what gets me up in the morning. And I didn't always have a coach. I've only had a coach since I started training for Boston. And, because I always coach myself. I had this goal of doing this marathon or that ultra or this tough mudder, and I'd get up and train. It's, you just got to do the work. It's, you know, once you get into the routine, you know, and it takes how many weeks to create a routine or to create a habit? It's 3 weeks or 21 3 weeks. Days. You have to just do it, and you make yourself do it. I think there's some people that need to have reminders or cues. They need they leave their sneakers at the door, or sometimes I do sleep in my running clothes just to facilitate things in the morning. But I also know that I have to be out there. And if I want to be able to finish this marathon, or if I want to be able to, you know, do a tough mudder and do more obstacles this time, then I'm going to have to put in the work. So that's my mindset. I don't think there's a trick to it. I don't think there are any hacks that you can do. Like, if you want to do something huge, if you have a huge goal, then you have to put in a huge amount of work. And if that requires you to change around your schedule, or to eliminate something from your life, or to eliminate some other habit that's not necessarily serving you, then you have to put the work in and make sure that it's getting done.
Yeah, and then knowing
gold.
Yeah, just put in the work. And then knowing too your body well enough to say, okay, maybe today I'm just too tired, I need to take another day, or maybe I'll just foam roll, right, or whatever it is.
Exactly.
So how far out are you defining challenges to work towards? Like, I've been doing these 90-day challenges. So, like, last weekend I did my first triathlon, which 3 months ago I decided to sign up for. And then, like, just signed up for the next 90 days is a trail marathon. It's my first marathon. It's Emily's first trail marathon. We both signed up in Vermont in three months. So, really? Like, we've been doing those objectives. But, like, do you have a time frame that you work for, you know, now I need to plan for this next thing?
For example, last August, I made an attempt at the Trans Rockies 6-day stage race. I did not finish all 120 miles. I finished 75 miles. And so as soon as I was home, I signed up for it again.
Nice.
A year later. So like a year out. Because I knew that it would take a long time to train for it, to get to a place where I felt more prepared than I was last year. And that has definitely changed the way I train, changed, you know, the trajectory of things. I now have this coach who I was only supposed to have through Boston, but he did such an amazing job and just totally changed things around that I just kept him on. And he's amazing. And I'm going to go train with him next week.
Yay.
For a week. And so I'm really scared. I put things on a calendar a year out, you know, maybe 9 months out. And then I have little things that kind of come up, you know, that I'll have a couple of weeks to prepare for. But I know that I have this bigger goal or these bigger goals that'll take care of the training.
That makes sense. So let's transition a little here from, yeah. Now you loved running. You started planning to do all these things. These were personal challenges for you. You're training for them. You're doing them. At what point did you decide to start sharing your story and like, you know, do the blog or do the book and start like owning, you know, yourself, Myrna, as a brand and kind of like building content around the story that you could tell?
Sure. Okay. In 2011, I started training for my first marathon, which was the Marine Corps Marathon. And I had been keeping everybody, my friends and family that were friends with me on Facebook, I was keeping them very informed about everything I was doing.
That's great. You got to tell the world to give yourself the motivation to get it done, right?
And accountability. Then you're like, oh, I told all these people and I can't back out now.
Yeah, and so it started that way. And a friend of mine who was also my colleague suggested that I start a blog, and so I did. She said, you know, you are a writer anyway, so you should be writing regularly, and maybe you should do it on a blog. And she showed me how to set up a Blogspot account And so I started writing then and there. I didn't write very frequently. I didn't, you know, I had no intentions other than sharing my journey with people. I called it Fat Girl Running, and which came with a whole host of of issues from other people. I mean, you shouldn't call it that. You should call it something else because fat is such a negative word. And then, you know, but I, you know, I stuck to my guns and said, you know, this is how I identify as a runner. So, you know, that's what I'm going to do. And it, you know, and it ended up being a blog where I could share positive stories about my experiences as a larger woman doing endurance sports. I shared negative experiences. You know, I did a lot of ruminating reports, and but again, not very frequently, not, you know, not with any other intention but to share. And then in 2015, I get contacted by Wall Street Journal. We love your blog. And I'm like, what, you're reading my blog?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And then an article, like they interview me, and then an article comes out the next week, and bam, my life has changed.
Wow. Talk about
blog,
a definitive
blog
moment.
Traffic explodes.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny because I still wasn't, you know, I read in it every month or like every other month. And, you know, there was one period after that where I did write in it every day at the request of, or at the suggestion rather, of a literary agent. She said, you've got to write in it every day. And that was a little too much with teaching and doing all the things that I was doing. But, you know, that's how it all started with this blog that, you know, it wasn't particularly well written. You know, I mean, the writing was fine. It, you know, I didn't, you know, do a lot of editing, and it was, you know, sometimes I rambled, you know.
That's what a blog's for, yeah.
Okay, rambling, okay. But I think that the important thing was that people saw a different kind of runner, one that was never, ever celebrated in the media, in sports media, or one that was not even celebrated, but one that was never shown in sports media. And so I think that was the appeal of it. You know, here's this, you know, big black girl doing ultras and marathons, and you know that wasn't normalized.
Right.
So I guess what I'm doing now is helping to normalize just other types of bodies, you know, bodies that haven't traditionally been represented in sports media.
Now, you said you self-identified with Fat Girl Running, but like actually putting that out there in the public sphere beyond your friends and family circle, was that a scary thing, or have you always been just very confident and comfortable in your skin to be the voice for this new, you know, this new form of running?
I wasn't scared at all. I've always been very confident in my body, and I, you know, I've said this a lot, but it's true. Like I don't come from a family that shames me for my body or for my size. And we just don't do that in my family. And, you know, it's in my family, it's important to be a good human being, to do well in school, to work hard. Those are the kinds of things that are important. And so, you know, if somebody had health issues, you know, we would like rally around them and try to get them better. But it was never about you're too big or you're too fat or you can't do this because you're fat. It was never, never anything like that. So I'm really fortunate to come from that kind of family. So yeah, I was, and I've always been confident in my writing. So I was happy and excited to get those stories out there.
Yeah, that's a very positive way of going about it. I feel like not everyone would feel that way. But so when you put it out in the world and it started getting a lot of traction, whether from before the Wall Street Journal or just from your family and friends, what were some of the kind of lessons that you learned from putting this newer image into the world from the response that you got for Fat Girl Running?
I learned that people needed to hear and read stories about people that looked like them,
right.
That ran at their pace, But despite sometimes feeling like an outsider at different events or just training, that they could still do it and still be okay. And so that was the major lesson that I learned from putting myself out there. People just, they wanted to hear these stories and they wanted to be able to envision themselves doing either something similar or something that they've always been scared of. But they wanted to see somebody making it possible for them.
Right, and I think it also changes the conversation of because you do talk a lot about like not being the fastest. You're not trying to be the fastest. You're trying to enjoy your time out there, and you love it, and that's why you're doing it. So I think it opens up the conversation of it doesn't matter what your pace is. If you're out there and you're enjoying it and you're loving what you're doing, it doesn't matter. As long as you're liking what you're doing and you feel like your soul is being fulfilled in some way. And it
Oh,
doesn't
yeah.
matter, because I think that could also translate to other things. Like if your job is, sucking the life out of you, probably don't do that. It doesn't matter what else you do, just do something that's going to be more beneficial to you in the world, or whatever it is. I think you
Totally.
can apply that to most things in your life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's, I have had the honor to get to speak in front of a lot of women, both plus size and quote unquote straight size. I don't even know why they call it that,
What is
Is
it? What is
that
it? Straight size?
straight size and plus size. We need different
Weird.
names, but
Straight
anyway.
and plus are not even like you don't put those words together.
I am not,
Oh, I make
I
it
am not a straight
up.
body size. I don't know what that means. That's so
What?
crazy.
Yeah.
That's
Am
so
I a
cylinder or I don't know, or plus signed. I don't know. But yeah, I get to talk to a lot of these women. I get to work with them, and it's incredible to hear stories of number one, how people shame them in many different ways, not just because of their body size, and how much they internalize that, and how that seeps into all areas of their lives,
Right.
and in their jobs, in their families, in the way that they perceive themselves, in the ways that they feel or don't feel any value. So, yeah, so it's really, really interesting to see that, for example. I just did this retreat over the weekend, and it was really cool how we were on a trail. It was me and about 21 other women, and it was pouring rain. And for some of them, it was their first trail run, and so I was a little worried about losing their interest. But they were game, and they went out and ran. Some of them took their shirts off because they felt such they had a feeling of tremendous freedom out there, just in a community with women who loved them and who wanted to try and had no barriers presented to them, because that's what they usually encounter, like in their real lives and in their non-trail running retreat lives. There's so many barriers presented to them, either explicit or implicit. And so I think that running and becoming a runner and experiencing the freedom and the strength and power that running gives you is really, really important. And it can be such a transformative experience.
Absolutely.
So,
So go ahead,
no, so, I was gonna
Jonathan.
say, so that's the Slow AF Trail Running Adventure Retreat, right?
Yes. We saw it on your Instagram. We promise we're not
Yeah.
just calling it that.
I absolutely love it. You do such a great job, like just defining what is gonna resonate with other people. I mean, like Fat Girl Running, Slow AF Trail Running Retreat, right? It's like so many people fall into those buckets that can empathize with that situation versus like looking at, these aspirational stories of, I don't know, like Killian Jornet running up Everest in 24 hours or
Yeah,
whatever it is,
that's
right? Like
not
that's amazing too,
happening.
but I love how you title things.
Thank you. And that's funny. It's the first thing that came to mind. I said, "Well, how can I name this so people get what this experience is going to be? Like, I want to be very clear about who this experience is for, what what they can expect." And so it's. And so that came to mind, and I said, oh, slow AF, obviously. And then, you know, it sold out in 4 days. I can't, you know, you can't make this up.
So good.
Awesome.
And it's clearly there is a need for experiences for people who don't run even a 10-minute pace. So 10-minute per mile pace. And so that would be me. And but, you know, there's so many people that want to run. They want to learn how to run, or they are veteran runners, but they, you know, they will never be fast, and they don't want to be fast, and they don't care about being fast. And so, you know, we have this incredible group of ladies, and they were all sold onto, like, I just want to run at my pace, and I want to learn it. I want to learn how to run trails. And that was it. But there, you know, in that, there are so many other life lessons taught out on a trail, which was great. And so, man, I wish that everybody that looked like me and that wanted to run, or you know, people who are, we had some thin people there too. They just run slow.
So. That would be me. I would love to come to one of these. So I like, is there a threshold for slowness? Yeah. like is 15 mile pace okay, or minute per mile okay?
Yeah. Yes, we have slower than that, who were walk running and or hike running in our case, and it was fine. You know, we have a no drop policy, and so everybody could be assured that they wouldn't be left alone, because that's another thing when people join running groups or running clubs out of running stores, they're very, very often left behind, and you know, that can be traumatizing. Yeah. And you know, that signals to you that you are not important, your pace is not accepted, and we don't care. So I wanted these ladies to feel like they were cared for, they could enjoy being on trails. You know, I taught them the basics of trail running and stuff, and keeping yourself safe and et cetera, you know, but like, I wanted them to feel empowered. And, you know, even if they are left to their own devices in a race, again, because it always happens, this message is for you race directors. Don't say you have a pace inclusive race and then there's nothing left and you've taken down all the things, you know, that's bad business. But anyway, you know, like, these are the kinds of ladies that I had, and they were just so happy to be out there and like, and to have people to run with and to talk with and to share their experiences. And a lot of these, you know, I had beginner trail runners. They were all runners already. And then I had, or avid hikers. And then I had a group of like veteran runners and veteran road runners. And they had done, tries and other things and duathlons and, you know, but they'd never been out really on the trails. And so, you know, we had this incredible, camaraderie and just spirit of learning and loving the trails, and, you know, it was just great.
So you're doing more of these, right?
I am doing more. I'm actually co-leading a hiking retreat in southern Utah in September. Awesome. September 21st through 27th through October 1st. And that's, it's mostly hiking. It's women centered. And I will offer a trail running clinic in that, like an easy, no pressure trail running clinic. And then I also will be in the Azores in Portugal.
Oh, awesome.
Oh man. I almost booked a last minute ticket there this spring just to go and like run around the mountaintops in the Azores. That's like my dream trail running spot.
I'll come, Myrna.
Okay. I mean, the trails are fantastic and beautiful. And actually, that's where I DNF'd my 65K.
For those listening that did not finish, right? Okay. Yeah. If they're not familiar with the terminology, yeah.
But even though I DNF'd, I had such a great time on those trails. You know, had it not been for my stupid ankle injury, which is all healed, I would have been able to finish. But it, you know, I fell in love with the trails. I said, even though I'm hurting, these trails are absolutely gorgeous. The islands are beautiful. The food is amazing. The people are wonderful. And so I immediately set up a trail running retreat, a slow AF trail running retreat with people in tourism and with the race director. And so like that's on the schedule for late May. And then I'm hopefully also doing one in Jackson, Wyoming, where I just was a couple of weeks ago.
Another one of my favorite places in the world. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I've been, you know, this past year has been so amazing because I've been to so many different places and I'm like, oh, I could do a retreat here.
It's good research for you.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I'll be doing more of those because really I want to serve this community of women. You know, obviously at different price points, but I really want to serve the community of people that has traditionally been left behind in all senses of that phrase.
And Jonathan.
Oh, he's feeling left out. Oh, poor Jonathan. Oh.
No, that's so great. So where can people find info on these upcoming events and register when tickets go on sale or however the flow of getting involved is going to be?
Well, my website is being created as we speak. I advertise things on my Instagram and on my Facebook group called Fat Girl Running, one word, all caps. And I call people from that group exclusively. It's a pretty large group because we have a set of community guidelines that you have to follow. And so all the people on my retreat last weekend, they knew the rules. You know, no body shaming yourself or others, no talking about weight loss, that kind of thing. Like, not that weight loss is bad, but we don't want to hear about it. And, you know, because our focus is athleticism. And so, and, you know, there's some other things that people have to adhere by. And it was just, and it creates buy-in, number one, and then I know what kind of clientele I'm going to get. And so, you know, I don't have to like explain rules or like keep checking people because, you know, I will check you if I need to. but I'd rather not have to do that. So anyway, so that's, so if you're interested, you would have to join my group on Facebook, Fat Girl Running. And then that's where I advertise. And then at some point I will have my website probably by the end of August.
Gotcha. Cool. And is that going to be slow AF trail running or, what?
It'll be the Mernivator.
The Mernivator.com.
Nice.
Awesome. And that's your Instagram as well. The Mernivator.
Right. Yes. And my Twitter.
It is so fun following you on Instagram. Every time I'm like, oh, I don't want to go running. Then I see your Instagram story. I'm like, but she's out there doing it too. So I guess I have to go now too. She's like psyched. It's like 4:45 a.m. getting up in the dark, going for long runs. I'm just like, all right, the Mernivator's doing it. So I guess I have to too.
So you went runner to blogger to author. I know we didn't touch on that yet, but you had this book, Beautiful Work in Progress, and speaker, and you're leading workshops, and you're doing these retreats. Like, are you still a teacher as well? Like, obviously you're teaching in these retreats, but are you were a Spanish teacher, right?
I was. I was a Spanish teacher and I was the director of equity and inclusion at my school, which I just left a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so I'm living out of my car. And so I moved.
Everyone should at some point.
Yeah.
Cars and hotels. Right. Yeah. So I, you know, I've been planning my exit for about the last 2.5 years. And as I've gotten more opportunities to do really, really, really cool things like I'm doing now. And so, yeah, now I am officially an entrepreneur. And I never, ever envisioned myself as someone who had a business. So it's just all new to me. It's very exciting. I've been reading as much as possible and like just trying to absorb everything about entrepreneurship and, you know, going it solo and got a lot of work to do, but it's really, really fun and really exciting to be able to utilize all of the skills that I have into something that serves people and something that serves my wallet.
No, that's incredible. I mean, I would say is like the second you started a blog, you were an entrepreneur, whether you were making money from it or not. I think it like the entrepreneur definition is just somebody who's confident to create and put a message out in the world, right? And like, but I think so many people like put entrepreneurship or like being a business owner up on this pedestal or something that's like, you know, I don't know. It's like out of reach, right? And they don't identify as it. But like, what do you think within you allowed you to just have that natural progression and dive headfirst into these books and be like, no, I'm going to own this and this is what I'm going to do. And like, this is my path.
Yeah. You know, I think when people started inviting me to speak, and it never sort of slowed down, that's when I knew. And, you know, it's funny because people were telling me, people in my close circle, hey, you've got a business here. Like you should pursue this. And not that I, you know, listen to other people exclusively, but I got this message from more than one person, and also from the universe. it never slowed down, and I would have to spend longer and longer times away from my job. But my job was incredible. They were so gracious and accommodating to me. And so they allowed me to just kind of go and do whatever I needed to do, whether it was like go do a photo shoot somewhere or go do the speaking engagement somewhere. Because, you know, it was funny. My head of school said, you know, you are showing people in real time what it means to not just to pursue your passions, but to work really hard, to put yourself out there and to just do it and go for it. And so that was cool to hear. And so I did that night, you know, and I've been learning a lot of really cool lessons in you know, owning a business and, you know, yeah, it's been really great.
That's awesome. So speaking of lessons, so what are some of the ones that you've learned in going through this process or any sort of, you know, failures that you've had that you've learned from or, yeah, lessons?
Roots on the trail that you tripped over.
Great metaphor.
Just pick yourself up and keep going because no one's going to save you. Yeah. There's that lesson. I would say the primary lesson for me, like as a woman, I was kind of devaluing myself and feeling bad when I was asking for money for a service that I was performing. I'm not anymore.
Good to hear. You can come out the other side.
You know, there's a whole thing about imposter syndrome and I'm like, you know what? I know what I'm doing. I'm good at teaching. I'm good at doing workshops. Of course, there's always stuff to learn and always ways to hone my skills and to get better at what I'm doing so I can serve my community more effectively. But I have learned to stop undervaluing myself and my experience and charging what I'm worth.
So for those people who maybe they aren't there yet with knowing their worth or knowing their value, were there any sort of books or like classes you took or any sort of mentors you looked up to help you with that?
Well, absolutely. Leaning In by Sheryl Sandberg, definitely. Yeah. I know that there are some people that have a problem with her book because it comes from a very sort of privileged position.
Yeah.
But I think that there's still lessons to be learned in speaking up for yourself and asking for raises.
Yes.
And I mean, I thought it was a very sort of practical handbook to that for that reason. And I followed everything she said. And when I got mine, I asked for my first huge raise. I got it. And
awesome.
And so, like, yeah, and it was really cool to feel like I had a seat at the table and feel bad about it and feel ashamed for asking for money. And, you know, so it took some practice to get to that. It takes anything you want to do takes practice and, you know, and failures. And like the first time I asked for a raise, I didn't get it. But, you know, I came back the second time and, you know, I was ready. I was ready. And I also had some, you know, little tricks.
Yes.
In my pocket, you know, and so I think it takes a lot of confidence or in practice, like even like the thing where you go into the bathroom stall and do the Wonder Woman pose or the Superman pose, that thing works. It really, yeah. really works. I can't remember her name, but there's a woman who wrote the book called Presence, and she talks about that at length, about taking up more space and having that be the key to gaining confidence. And so I've read all that kind of thing, and and also just like, you know, listening to TED Talks and watching and observing other people.
Yeah, great. Just awesome. I'm going to ask for my next raise. Jonathan?
Yeah, that was a dangerous conversation. I'll do my Wonder Woman pose as well. it's fantastic. I mean, that's so useful, and I'm sure a lot of people feel that. I mean, I feel that, like, the first... I don't know. I did some speaking after I put a film out a few years ago, and have had some speaking gigs here and there, and constantly feel what you were talking about, where like I have almost devalued myself and felt bad asking for the value that the service should demand, and like the whole imposter syndrome thing is something that I've identified with, and so that's. I mean, just hearing you talk about that and pushing through it is inspiring to me, as well as I'm sure anybody else out there feeling that. Mm. As an educator, how do you think that helped you with like this entrepreneurial path?
Well, I mean, specifically, it has allowed me to like formulate workshops, and that's just something that I do and I've always done as a diversity educator, like facilitating discussion, creating experiences for people where it's fun, but there's a lot of deep learning involved. So that's something that comes directly from my educator background. You know, speaking in front of audiences, I'm also a lapsed classical singer, so I'm very comfortable on stage.
The most well-rounded person we've ever met. Here she is.
I do everything. Yeah. Except for science. So all of those things, everything that I've ever done has converged on this like beautiful thing that's happening right now. You know, I was a published writer before I started my blog, actually. And so like, I've always been a writer. I've always been somebody who's been comfortable on stage. And like the athletics is just, it just gives me stories to tell.
Yeah.
And it makes my life better. So it's really cool to see all of these things coming together to create this beautiful life that I have.
Well, I think the I do it all except science is an interesting thing to point out. Like how do you do it all? What, like, how do you balance that in your life? Between the athletics, the writing, the speaking, the workshops, like, does it all kind of like come together fluidly for you, or is it a daily struggle to figure out what you're prioritizing?
That's a great question, because I haven't figured that out yet. It was becoming too much with my job on top of it, and so I was very, very overwhelmed. But I think everything does meld together very nicely. The speaking comes. You know, the speaking creates opportunities, the workshops create opportunities, sort of more of the same kind of opportunities. So like that part isn't overwhelming. I am very disorganized. So like, you know, being a good logistical planner is not my thing. So I had to hire an assistant for that. You know, I'm a creative. So like, I like to create, and I don't like to think about like details.
I feel ya.
That can become overwhelming for me. And I'm learning, you know, I learned from this weekend's retreat what I need to get better at, or what I just need to simply hire somebody to do for me. And the speaking, again, it comes naturally. You know, I prepare, but I love preparing for those things. I love writing plans for workshops and executing those plans and seeing how they turn out. I love that. And so it's still really, really exciting. I know that at some point, you know, I'll be looking for the next thing. But I've always been somebody that has done a lot of different things. When I went to college, I have a degree in music, and I also have a degree in Spanish. So I knew going into my adulthood that I would need to be doing a lot of different things to maintain my sanity.
Do you feel the strain on your home life, your, you know, family relationships or your friend relationships with everything going on in your professional life?
You know, I think it definitely took its toll on my son, who's 15 now, last year when I was away so much. And so it definitely took a toll on his grades. And I say that because I like wasn't home a lot. And so he would stay in the dorm, and then I'd be home, then he'd be home, then he'd be in the dorm again. And so there wasn't any consistency in his life. And so I, you know, I didn't berate him for his grades, which I mean, weren't horrible, but you know, they could have been better. Anyway, he's not going to listen to this.
Shout out to your son. Yeah.
Hey, son. But you know, so next year he's actually going to stay down in Georgia. He's going to be a boarder at the school, and so he'll have a lot more structure to his life, because I know that with me being away so frequently, that has an effect on him. And so he'll, you know, he'll be a better student. I think I'll be able to be a better parent, you know, not that I'm a bad parent, but like I'd like to be a better parent, the best parent I could be. So I want him to feel like he's fulfilled, and then that he's doing well. And then I think that'll have a lot of implications for like further success and happiness for, on his part. So so yeah, definitely had a toll, took a toll, but I knew that. And so like I'm trying to create ways and pathways to not have to worry about that in the future.
That's great. And so going back to one thing we kind of brushed over, and every response that you have is kind of just making me think this statement anyway, is the beautiful work in progress, your book that came out. So we'd love to hear a little bit about that process and writing a book, speaking of balance, because I've heard varying things from varying authors, and I would love to hear from your perspective, first of all, what was the inspiration for writing that particular book, but also how did you accomplish that overall?
Sure. But first, I really need to go to the bathroom. I'm like a 2-minute break or a 1-minute break.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'll be right back.
All right,
okay.
No worries.
That's amazing.
So Myrna, you're in the bathroom right now, but
I wonder if she can still hear us.
We're just going to reflect on everything that we've been talking about, and it's fantastic. I'm super inspired and
such a self starter.
Like, I know, right?
Because I don't think that everyone has that within them, but I think that honestly, I think running helps a lot with that.
I agree.
Like pushing yourself to be more intrinsically motivated, because once you get in that routine, you feel yourself kind of crushing it the rest of your life.
Yeah. Whether it's going for a run or waking up early or starting a meditation routine, like whatever that is, I think once you do have that discipline to like say, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm going to do, and then you do it.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, like after meditating, your mind is clear and on fire. If after running, your body is energized and you're ready to go.
Yeah.
It opens up doors as soon as you do that one thing, for sure.
People have excuses for everything under the sun, myself included, and probably yourself and all of our listeners too. Like, I always find my here's Myrna. We're just chatting.
Yeah, we were just reflecting, right? So finish that sentence. That was good. What's your excuse?
What's your excuse? I was just gonna say people have excuses for everything. You talk to anyone in your life, and you're like, why didn't you just do that? I mean, it seems like you really like that, or whatever the thing is, and you can kind of see right through that. It's pretty transparent that they're just making up stuff so that they won't be in a position that they'll feel vulnerable, or they'll do something new, or that maybe they won't succeed right away at. And I'm guilty of it too, for sure. But I think like doing these interviews and also just being entrenched in outdoor activities and doing that stuff on the weekends, you kind of like see it a little bit more in people, and you're like, well, but you could do that.
Right.
You could do that every day. You could do it every weekend. So that was my thought.
That's a good thought.
It's not as profound as what Myrne is saying, but it was what I was thinking.
It was great. So welcome back. So we were on the beautiful work in progress and the process of writing that book.
Yeah.
With a tangent by Jonathan and Emily.
Well, I went to the bathroom. Now I can concentrate, though. A beautiful work in progress. Yeah, my book writing experience was really, really interesting. I did not go the traditional route. I didn't have to send out any queries. I didn't have to do any of that. I was contacted by literary agents because I'd had this media exposure, and then they started reading my blog and then invited me to submit proposals, or a proposal rather. And so I went with one, and they sold my book to a great publisher, Grand Harbor Press. And then I got started writing the book. Good thing I was a teacher and I had the summer off, because I got my contract at the end of May. And so I had the whole summer to write it. And I did that. And that was the easiest part of the process, I have to say, writing the manuscript, because I knew I only had 4.5 months to do it. So normally people have a little bit more time to write their books, and I don't know why it happened this way, but I'm glad it did. It forced me to write almost every day. And so I had to sit down, write my 1,000 to 2,000 words sometimes, depending on whether or not I'd taken a break, and I got done. So the genesis of the book was such that, I mean, I think they wanted it to be a kind of like how to get started, that kind of thing, but I was much more interested in doing a memoir about my running experience, and also to fill in all the holes that the media had left, because, you know, they frame your narrative in a certain way, and I wanted to frame my own narrative. So, and that's what, I think I achieved that by writing the Would I write it a little bit differently now? Maybe. Maybe I'll just write another book.
Part but, two. Still in progress, more beautiful.
Exactly. I have a couple of, like, a little bit of it is based on the blog and specific blog posts, but I fleshed those out and made them a little bit more literary, and I didn't want it to sound too bloggy. I wanted it to, you know, be something that maybe other people would read, people that didn't read my blog. And so I put in stories about my race experiences. They're more than race reports, but the things that I learned and the sort of greater lessons of life that I learned doing these particular races. And I also wanted to stress how important my family was and who I am today. And so I wrote a lot about my family, because I think you only get one sort of perspective when you're in the media. Here's this overweight woman who started running because she thought she was having a heart attack, but it's so much deeper than that. Here's this woman who started running. No, I started running in high school. And so, like, you know, people get things wrong, and I just wanted to clarify those things. And I wanted to tell stories. And so that's what I did. The book did, when it came out, it was on the Amazon solo weeks, which was really cool for a first time author. And it's definitely been doing well. Excited and honored to, you know, have my first book do so well, and number one, and it, like, just having the opportunity to write a book, which most people don't have that opportunity, so it's really cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think that's an important lesson that, you know, people need to keep in mind in today's, like, 140 character world, yeah. Right? It's like a story is so much more than a headline. And it's ridiculous the amount of like things that people share that they haven't even read. They see the headline and think like, here we go, and they share it, right? So that's yeah, totally. So one thing that we have been asking every guest here on the Stokecast is, how do you define stoke? What does that mean to you?
Excitement and pleasure. I, you know, I don't know, as a verb or as a noun?
You're the writer, we don't know. You're a writer. Whatever you want it to be, stoke means what it means to you.
Yeah, I mean, I would say excitement and pleasure. You know, I think you should do things that give you pleasure and excitement for life and you know, enthusiasm for life, enthusiasm for living your best life. You know, if it's running, if it's doing CrossFit, if it's writing a book, if it's opening a business, I think you should aim to do things that sometimes might be out of your comfort zone, but that you're really interested in doing and that you really think would change your life in a positive way. I think you should go for it. You should find a way, figure out a way to do it, and then do it.
Yes. Love it. Well, there it is. Thanks so much, Myrna, for joining us today. We'll have all of your links and such in the show notes, but it's the Myrnavator, it's Fat Girl Running, it's Beautiful Work in Progress, and soon we have, well, yeah, Slow AF Trail Running Retreats
the
as well.
Myrnavator.com at some point. Yeah. We'll put that link in there, and it'll be live at some point.
Thanks so much for your time, yeah. Myrna. It's been great chatting with you.
Thanks again for having me on your show.
Of course. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
There you have it. That's the Myrnavator. And take her advice to heart, please, right now. Decide what in your life would be positively impactful for you now and for your future that you want to do that might be out of your comfort zone. Decide what it is. Figure out a way.
Yeah.
Go do it. Act on it. Challenge yourself.
Just light a fire under that booty and
light
just,
that
and
fire.
Just do it. So you can check out all of the info about Myrna in the show notes on Explore Expired. Oh my God.
Explore Expired?
Exploreinspired.com/stokecast.
We're not expired yet.
Oh my God. I've been saying that as a joke and now it's become like part of my rhetoric. Anyways, you can check it all out at exploreinspired.com/stokecast and keep listening and subscribing, and make sure you rate and review us on iTunes if you like what you're hearing.
Thanks a lot for tuning in, and follow the Myrnavator for more amazing inspiration. And go create, go act, go do, make yourself a better you.
Ooh, love it.
Right?
Stay tuned for more, guys.
Spitting fire. See you next week.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Emily Holland.
And I'm Jonathan Ronzio. We'll catch you next week with another episode of the Stokecast.